Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 27th, 2014. This is episode 1078. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experience in entertainment, media, and technology. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/techguy. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about, well, you know, tech. Computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. or Canada. You can also call from outside those countries. Just use Skype or some such stuff. Heather Hammond is here, the phone ranger, wearing a shirt that says, "Oh, well, whatever, never mind." Is that, are you going to give me some attitude now, HH? Is that it? Oh, we can't talk anymore. They broke your microphone. Gee. I wonder how that happened. So much to talk about this week. We've got Apple results, another record quarter, although for the first time in some time, a fairly significant drop in iPad sales. We can talk about whether the iPad, and there's competition for one thing. Also, a quarterly results from Microsoft, right? Facebook? A lot of companies announcing their Big Bang quarters. E.T. was discovered in New Mexico. That's exciting. The landfill where Atari dumped the E.T. cartridges. The game was so bad that Atari dumped. We don't know how many. Many, many, many. All the remaining stock of the E.T. cartridge. I have one here. Somebody's stolen my E.T. game. Not from the landfill. Somebody actually bought it. Is it out there? We'll find it. We better find it. World's worst video game, apparently. Talk about that. But I think I want to talk about, and I didn't do it yesterday because I wanted to really reserve judgment. But I want to talk about the proposed, and this is important, underscore proposed FCC rules on the open internet. Quite a, fuss over that. I was a little perturbed and miffed. Ah, there we go. Thank you. I now have my E.T. cartridge. Thank you, John. You found E.T., and it wasn't in Roswell. There was a lot of upset, and I was one of them, on Wednesday when the Wall Street Journal leaked new proposed rules on the FCC that would allow companies to pay for better access, pay internet service providers for better access to their customers. Now I want to get you all upset about this. I don't know, and I'm sure this is going to be difficult because it's a challenge. The ideas are challenging; they're difficult to understand, and I think there's kind of this general, probably this general sense of, well, who cares? Well, we should care, and I'll tell you why. But the really kind of shocking and disappointing thing to me. Now, remember that the chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, is a former cable company lobbyist, a former cell phone company lobbyist. He's in the Hall of Fame, the Cable Hall of Fame and the Cell Phone Hall of Fame, for his loyal duty to these industries. Then gets nominated to be the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, the watchdog agency that represents all of us protecting what, you know, our airwaves that we own as the people, make sure that you know, they're protected from predatory practices by corporations. The guy is now in charge. Talk about the fox in the hen house. And we've just frankly been waiting for the other shoe to drop, and well, now it's dropped. He, of course, on the FCC blog said, no, wait a minute, nothing has changed. We still believe in an open internet. He lied. He lied. Big lie. And, you know, it turns out in government, if you make a big lie, people go, well, he couldn't be possibly lying about that. That would be such a huge lie. He would be immediately called out. But most people just read it and said, oh, you see, it's okay. The FCC is not doing anything different. That's the chairman said so. It is. The chairman's lying. The chairman's representing, and we'll probably go right back into industry. Meanwhile, in the meantime, during his tenure in this watchdog commission, he is going to gut the FCC's protection of our internet. Now, this is that's the bottom line. You should be upset. You should write to your member of Congress. You should write to the FCC. Now, what's going to happen is these are proposed rules. The commission will then vote, and then there will be a period of public comment. Now, here's what we want the FCC to do. Here's what the court told them they needed to do if they wanted to preserve an open internet. You know, maybe I better step back and explain what an open internet is. As we understand the internet, it's a utility. Think of it as a utility. It delivers bits to our homes so we can surf the net. And it's a wonderful thing. With so much innovation has happened. I mean, I shouldn't have to tell you what an amazing thing the internet has been for all of us. And for me personally, I worked for 30 years in broadcast, still am. This is a broadcast show. But about 8 years ago, I thought, you know, I want to try something. What if I put these shows out on the internet and let people download them or watch them and listen to them live? And then I could own that company. I wouldn't need television transmitters or cable deals. I wouldn't need a radio transmitter or tower. All of those expenses, poof, gone, because we can distribute directly to our audience. And it's been a great success. I started a company called This Week in Tech, which has been a huge success. If these rules go through, I would not be able to do what I did. I probably won't be able to continue to do what I'm doing. So I have a little, I'll admit, a dog in this hunt. The FCC wants to allow companies to pay what they call commercially reasonable fees for improved access to you. So let's understand this. Your internet service, and by the way, at the same time this is happening, Comcast is asking to merge with Time Warner to become a massive internet service provider serving more than two-thirds of the entire country. So let's just use Comcast as the example. I'm a Comcast customer. Many of you are. That's our internet service provider. In most cases, we might have one other choice. We don't have a lot of choice. Another wonderful thing given to us by the FCC. They allowed these monopolies, these regional monopolies. So in most areas of the country, you can get your internet service from a cable company or a phone company. And that's about it. There's not a lot of choice. So I'm a Comcast customer. They have the fastest internet in my house. I'm very happy with it. I have Comcast TV. It's great. I've noticed the price has been going up a lot, but that's okay. But I pay it because I want fast, high-speed access to the whole internet, to YouTube and to Netflix, to Twit, to my network, to other networks. I want to see what's happening in Turkey. I want to see what's happening around the world. I want to be in touch. I want to learn about important issues that I can vote on or write to my members of Congress. It's been an amazing force for democracy. We want to use it freely, and we pay a lot of money for our internet access. Well, Comcast wants to charge the edge networks, and this is important, more money for better access to us. So what they're going to do is go to companies like Netflix and Google, YouTube, and say, if you were to pay us just a little bit more money, a few dollars more per subscriber, we would make sure you have a fast lane to those subscribers. Now, the FCC says, you don't have to worry about this. It's going to be a commercially reasonable fee. There's no such thing, because there are many innovations on the internet built on this free and open internet that don't have financial resources. They're startups. These startups would not exist. These startups Now, I just want to point out that that eBay was such a startup. Facebook was such a startup. Yahoo and Google, Apache, the World Wide Web, Flickr, Blogger, on and on. These were, a few years ago, the little guys who couldn't afford commercially reasonable fees to get access to you. That's what we're potentially saying goodbye to. Now, there's something we can ask the FCC to do that will help, and I'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I know this stuff is complicated. I know it's kind of boring. But boy, the bottom line is so important. We need to preserve an open internet. It is what made the innovation of the last 20 years happen. And it will go away if companies like Comcast are allowed to say, no, if you want access to our customers, we need money from you. And of course, Netflix can pay this and has and will. And of course, YouTube and Google can pay this. They have and they will. But all the new little companies that are springing up will not. And they won't have access. You will not. You literally will come to a day where you go to surf to a website and you can't get there because they didn't pay Comcast the corrupt fees that Comcast is demanding and that the FCC wants to allow them to pay. You literally will not. Or you'll go to a video site and the video site will buffer. It'll stutter. It won't work well because they didn't pay the backsheesh, the corrupt fees, to your internet service provider. And that will be fully legal. Now, it's not over. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a really great article from Stanford University's Center for Internet Law. The Center for Internet and Society at Stanford Law School. The article, a great article by Barbara Van Schewick, which is titled, "The FCC Changed Course on Network Neutrality, Why You Should Care." It does a great description. And she gives us an out. And this is if you come away with one thing, come away with this. The internet as we know it is threatened by the corrupt regime, the corrupt watchdogs at the FCC. They have not yet voted. There will be a period of public comment. It would be completely appropriate to also write to your member of Congress. In fact, I would strongly do so. They tell the FCC what they can and cannot do. And in fact, it's the Telecommunications Act that the FCC is leaning on for this. The Telecommunications Act prohibits them from preventing access fees unless the FCC declares internet service providers a public utility, common carriers. The Wall Street Journal on Friday said, "The commission has decided for now against reclassifying broadband as a public utility." But of course it's a public utility. They don't want to do that because they're corrupt, because they're owned by Comcast and Verizon and AT&T. They plan to get jobs right out of their office, high-paying empty jobs, just as FCC commissioners have done, just as the former chairman of the FCC, Michael Powell, who now runs the NCTA, the Cable Television Association, for a pretty nice penny. It's a revolving door. These corrupt commissioners, this corrupt chairman, is protecting the commercial interests of Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T. Period. Against our interests as the people. We need to put pressure on the FCC to reclassify broadband as a public utility. Then the open internet rules that they proposed last year will be legal. The court even told them that. The court said, this is what you need to do. The court gave them a roadmap. Comcast and these other guys want to double dip. They want to charge you for access to the internet, and they want to charge the internet for access to you. And companies that can't or won't pay just won't work. And all the innovation, all the benefit that we have derived from the internet over the last 20 years is gone. And don't believe the big lie that the chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, promulgated on the FCC blog this weekend. Nothing's going to change. It's okay. Pay no attention to these rules. Look over there. Don't buy it. He's corrupt. It's shocking. It's really shocking. And we can't let this happen. This is too important. All right. I just wanted you to hear that. I want you to understand that. I wanted to take some time to think about it, to really read all of the materials, because it is confusing. But I would like you to go to our blog, to our website, techguylabs.com. I put a link to this post from the Stanford Law School, the Center for Internet and Society. This is an even-handed, complete explanation of this whole thing. And I understand it's complicated. I understand especially geeks don't like to get involved. We don't like politics. We like to stay out of it. You can't. This is one fray you cannot stay above. You must participate. 8888-ASK-LEAH. That's the phone number. If you have anything to say about this, I'd love to hear it. But we can talk about anything else. Computers, smartphones. Just got the world's largest smartphone. I ordered this a little while ago. Windows Phone 8.1 is coming out soon from Microsoft. And by all appearances, it finally looks like Microsoft has caught up with iPhone and Android. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get a Nokia. Now, by the way, as of Friday, there's no more Nokia phones. It's Microsoft Mobile. Microsoft spent $7.6 billion to acquire the mobile business of Nokia. Nokia can still make tires. It's okay. But not mobile phones. Microsoft will be making these from now on. So I thought I'd get it just before that happened. So we could talk about that. 8888-ASK-LEAH. Heather Hummond, I think your microphone is fixed. We've reconnected the RJ11 in the basement using specialized radio-style tools.
RJ's kind of like R2-D2, right?
Yeah.
He's my little robot that keeps things moving along.
Yeah, people don't know, but you're digital. So when the cable falls out of the jack, there's no more Heather. So how are you?
I'm good.
How are you? Yes. Did you have a good Easter? I didn't get to ask you.
We did. I left you the best part of the Easter rabbit there, the ears.
That's okay. This is funny. So why make a whole Easter bunny when all people really want to do is bite off the ears?
Exactly.
Very clever.
It's kind of like breast meat. You know how you can just buy that in the grocery store?
Yeah, sure. I know what you're talking about.
Well, anyway, let's get back to the internet.
Who should I talk? You're just trying. I know what you're up to. You're trying to get me in trouble. You know that I have no impulse control.
Well, and you do.
I've just demonstrated that I am not the patsy you think I am. Who should I talk?
All right. Talk to Steve in Culver City.
I do adore Heather. You know that. Thank you, Heather. Steve, Culver City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Two questions. I'm going to talk about one about Microsoft 8 and the other thing about Echolink ham radio.
Okay.
First one, I have a Inspiron 17.17-inch 4-year-old computer, and I want to upgrade. I'm finding a quandary because I want to go to a non-touchscreen computer, and I saw a Toshiba laptop with a 15.6-inch screen, 8 gigabyte, 1 TB hard drive, but it had Microsoft Professional 7 Microsoft system. When I went to Best Buy to talk about it, they said, whoa, we don't know how long Microsoft 7 is going to be around. Now, but they also told me Microsoft 8, if you use it with a non-touchscreen, you have a lot of problems using it.
Oh, come on. Don't ever ask these morons anything. You would think they would understand that the future of brick-and-mortar retail, given that you can buy any of this stuff online, is service, is information. But the problem is, I guess they can't afford to pay these clerks the amount of money they need to get smart people. If you're really smart, you're out there with a startup. Windows 8's fine. Windows 7's fine. You could buy the Windows 7 machine and upgrade it to Windows 8. That's fine. Windows 8.1, the newest version, is great with desktop and mouse and no touch. So go ahead and get it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do you know about Full Sail? Full Sail is a campus, university with a campus, but they also have an online program. And they've got a degree program now in entrepreneurship and innovation. How about that? Let me show you the website, fullsail.edu. And a disclaimer, this is a sponsor. This is an ad. I kind of segued into that so delicately. Maybe you didn't know that. Yeah. They're supporters of the Tech Guy Show, which is really great. If you visit fullsail.edu/techguy, you can see all of the different degrees that they offer. Online and campus degree programs, they're centered on real-world experience in entertainment, media, and technology. Thanks to advances in communication and business technology, entrepreneurs really can launch their business ideas to a huge audience. But you got to get some skills in innovation and in entrepreneurship. They have a master's program. It's an intensive 12-month program, guides students through the process of developing a tech-based product or service in a way that takes advantage of this new world of ours. Courses include topics such as ideation, coming up with the idea, product design and development, financial strategies, all by experienced instructors in the business. Full Sail University. It's centered on real-world education. Students will graduate with a fully formed business strategy and the tools they need to pitch their product or service to potential investors. In fact, they offer a variety of master's degrees in related fields, including internet marketing, business intelligence, public relations. To learn more about Full Sail's master's program in innovation and entrepreneurship or any of their related programs, I want you to go to the website here, fullsail.edu/techguy. fullsail.edu/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, 888-827-5536. So, Steve, I understand your aversion to touch. You don't want a touch screen. You want a laptop. But I would recommend Windows 8 only because it's kind of the future. The good news is Windows 8.1 really makes it more desktop-y. For instance, you don't ever have to see the Metro screen. It'll boot right to desktop. Even better, the update one on top of it makes it even more like the old days. But Windows 7's good too. So you could do what you wish. Don't listen to the guy who said, "Oh, you can't use it." You can. Microsoft understands that some people don't want to use touch.
Okay, so basically, I have to think about by myself and not worry about the information I get from people who really don't know anything.
Yes. And the good news is, and one of the reasons it doesn't matter anymore, and one of the reasons these companies are going out of business, is everything you need to know is on the internet, or you can call me, read reviews.
I really have a lot of respect for you.
Well, and I read all the stuff on the internet and digest it, chew it up, and spit it out. So,
One other quick question. I know you have a lot of people there. I'm an extra ham radio operator, and I noticed on your blog that you're getting there, too.
W6TWT. I'm not extra. I'm just general. But
I'm KG6VNF. Anyway.
Nice to meet you.
I got on with Echolink.
Yeah.
Have you used Echolink yet?
I have. It's very cool.
I love it. It's really good. But we're finding out, like, we have in a radio group in a firehouse, and sometimes we're getting through firewalls and adjusting the computers so the Echolink works right.
Well, you know, the irony of Echolink is it's internet. So it's prey to all the problems the internet is prey to, right? So you're combining analog radio, which is what ham radio is analog radio.
Right.
But you're using an internet link between two analog towers.
Exactly.
And, of course, if you can get to the tower, and it's FM frequencies, so, you should be able to get through most walls. But if you can't hear an FM radio in the firehouse, you're not going to be echolinking in the firehouse either.
Well, they put a regular service and got through radio personnel got through the firewall.
Yeah.
It works great, but sometimes we have to do some fine tuning on the radios and the computer so people can really hear very well.
Echolink is a really great idea because almost anybody, even in very noisy situations, almost any ham can get to a nearby tower on a hill or a mountain. And that's the Echolink tower. So with a simple handy talkie, and that's what you'll want to use in emergency services, right? You don't want to be tied down.
That's what we use.
Yeah. Yes. So with a simple, inexpensive handy talkie, this is a great way to get into ham radio. You tune to the local tower. You got to find the tower. There are plenty of databases.
Repeater. You find the repeater.
It's called a repeater, exactly. That tower has, at the base of it, a computer with an internet connection, and it goes over the internet to the other tower, which is then near whoever you're talking to. So it's kind of like Skyping.
It is, like with a ham radio license.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. I mean, you might wonder, well, why not just use Skype? But I think for the way you're using it for emergency services, that's great. Because now, if the internet goes out, your Echolink connection goes out. So there are other data-based systems that
Well, you know, like Field Day. We have Field Day coming
up. Field Day's awesome.
And everybody operates either on generator or battery.
Right.
We prove to the world we can operate in any situation, like Katrina.
And I got to tell people, this may seem like, why would you want to do that? This is exactly why. Katrina. Natural disasters, emergency. That's why it's your fire department probably has a ham. One hopes so. One hopes the police department does. And there are many hams in every community who participate in emergency services. It's a really great service provided by hams. And I'm thrilled to know you're doing that, Steve. Are you a firefighter?
No, I'm a volunteer with the. We have a CERT group.
Yeah, CERT.
And we have a radio organization with the fire department, and that's how we support them with communications.
Exactly. In fact, if what a great way to give back to the community as a ham to help with emergency services. I think it's wonderful.
Well, and they provided us with refurbished ambulance, which we have three radios in.
Oh, that's great.
Mobile communications.
What town is this, Culver City?
Yeah, we have a lot of support from Culver City Fire.
That's how it should be. And if you're a firefighter or a law enforcement or emergency services in listening to the show, find a ham. Find your local CERT group. Work with them if you're not already. I bet you most of them are.
And good luck with your extra.
Thank you. I might stop now. You know, you could do most of what I want to do with a general. In fact, you can get the basic technician's license, which is very easy to get, and do all of this echolink stuff. This FM handy talky stuff is all accessible to the very most basic ham license, which is not hard to get. And it's a lot of fun. It is a great event. We're going to actually talk to my friend Bob Heil and Gordon West, two very famous Hall of Fame hammers, ham radio operators, at Hamvention in Dayton. It's coming up soon. And we'll talk to them. Moving along, Cy in Long Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. I have one question that probably leads to another answer from you. I bought a box from Metricom. It's called the G2 Midnight Box. I call it the cable killer. Have you ever heard of it?
No. Tell me about it.
Oh, man, it's out of sight. Okay. This is a box that's based off the XBMC platform. And you can buy the box, or you can go to the internet, to their website, and download whatever platform for your computer. And then you add these things called repositories, and it's a special HTTP link, and then you enable it, and you can watch anything you want on TV for free. That cable killer.
Doesn't sound at all legal, but okay.
No.
You know, we're in the Supreme Court right now arguing about Aereo, which the networks want to shut down, ABC versus Aereo. They heard oral arguments this week, and we'll find out in a few maybe weeks or months what the Supremes think of it.
Well, with this, Leo, it's not illegal, but they do have a disclaimer for some links that, you know, they have copyright. So there's
and this is the debate over Aereo. It's very similar with this, which is that they are debating the fact that this is copyrighted material, and the networks say, hey, you need to pay what's called a retransmission fee to retransmit copyrighted material. And Aereo's saying, what are you talking about? We're just like anybody's with their rabbit ears. We're pulling it out of the air.
OTA. Uh-huh.
It's over the air. And I presume that's what Metricom is doing as well.
Yes, but I like this one, Leo, because it has a form for support. No other box has that. It has updates for everything. If you have a question, if something goes wrong.
And you're using XBMC, right, which is a wonderful media center.
That's right. It's based off that Xbox platform. And then they have all these repositories. Like, I guess I shouldn't mention any of them.
The issue, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't like the Roku. You know why I don't like the Roku? Because you have to pay to watch, network TV.
Well, that's why the networks don't like Metricom, because you're not paying to watch. Now, this is a really interesting debate. I talked about it yesterday, because if you're sitting in Chicago or you're in Long Beach, you get LA TV stations through an antenna.
That's right.
So you're getting all the network programming for free through an antenna. But the cable companies, they say, well, wait a minute, you know, because we charge the cable companies, the networks charge the cable companies for retransmission. Mm-hmm. We can't charge you for over the air, but we don't want you to be using a box that's kind of like a cable box, which this
is. They're greedy.
$109. Of course they're greedy. Let's be fair. They've also rejiggered their business model. They're making more expensive shows, better content, because they say, well, not only do we have the ad revenues and all this stuff, and the ads are still in it. They're not going away. But we also have the cable revenues, so we're making more money. So we're going to pump more of that into production, right? TV shows are better than ever, right?
Right.
Well, that's why. So if it's a new business model, I don't know what the answer is, but I'm glad you gave it a plug. MATRICOM, the G-Box, about $109 on Amazon. I guess I should get one and see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bum, 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 bum. Speaking of hams, Mr. Joe Walsh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Joe, very active in the ham community. And, you know, it's interesting. I think this is not unusual. Charlie Daniels is a ham, too. A lot of the guys who spend a lot of time on the road touring bring their equipment with them, and it's a little bit of home in their, you know, Hyatt suite there. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Patricia, next in Costa Mesa. Hi. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I got a new Dell Windows 7 Professional about a month ago, only because I had XP.
Right. And that was enough of a transition. You didn't want to go too far too fast.
Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, it's just like XP, isn't it? Don't you feel like it's it's just like XP, isn't it? Pretty much.
No, I'm finding it more complicated.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, hey. Nobody said this would be easy. Actually, everybody said it would be easy, but they lied. I think they did. Anybody can use a computer. No, it's like sit down at this piano. You'll be playing symphonies in a heartbeat. No, you got to spend some time with it. You'll get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have Microsoft Security Essentials on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought everything was loaded in the computer, but I keep getting Windows version installer.
Windows
and wanting me to install it.
Install what?
Windows version installer.
And it wants you to install Windows?
Yes.
Hmm. I don't know what it's telling you.
Windows has built into Windows, starting with Windows 7, the ability to I know what this is. Have you activated Windows?
I have Windows on the computer, yeah.
Yeah, but what is it asking you to do?
It's Windows version installer 2011 to 2014 copyrighted, all rights reserved. And then I click out of it, it tells me, do you really want to go out of it?
Yeah.
Gives me the fear of clicking off.
Yes, you're right to be afraid, be very afraid. I think it's just the Windows installer wants to update to a new version, I'm thinking. But I understand your fears. You run Windows Update, right?
Yes.
And you keep it up to date?
Yes.
I think it's...
But this will not stop showing up. I've had this computer over a month now, and it just will not go away.
Yeah, this is... All right, this is an issue because we tell you over and over again, don't run installers, don't run programs that you didn't expect, that you didn't ask for, you don't know where they're from. So your instinct is absolutely right. However, I believe that this is, but I don't know for sure, but I believe that this is a completely normal request to update the Windows installer. This is a program many programs, not just Microsoft use, but many companies use to install their software. And it gets out of date. And if it's out of date, it's going to want to update it. Does it say what version you're on right now?
No.
All right. So the chat room is telling me that it could be malware. There is a program that does this. It's called the installer virus. That's interesting.
Oh.
So your instinct was right. I'm looking at the... looking at the suggestions, I'm just, it sounds like you've got bit. Do you have a trusted computer guy somewhere? Did you buy it from a local company or anything like that?
No, it came from the internet.
And did it do it? Did it do this right away, or did it just start after you used it for a while?
It came on right away.
Did you buy it from a retailer on the internet that you know that is trustworthy? Or was it like on eBay?
eBay.
Yeah. I'm thinking that your instinct is probably right, that this is not what you want to have on there. And it's hard for me to know for sure. I think that... Was it used on eBay or was it brand new?
No, it's brand new.
Yeah. They're telling me that there is a program, VUUPC.
Yes, that comes up here too.
Yeah, that's what it is. So good, we figured this out.
And the icon, you know, because when I click out of the to install it, then I get this icon over on the side.
So what I want you to do, you can actually uninstall this. So this is why it maybe isn't considered quite a virus. You need to go to your add remove programs. Actually, I guess in Windows 7,
okay.
They call it programs. And you're going to uninstall VUUPC. Okay?
Okay.
That should be in the add removes. See if that fixes things. I'm a little worried. A little worried that there may be other stuff on there. And I'm mostly worried that whoever sold you this on eBay put some stuff on there. Now, it's probably benign advertising wear like VUUPC, but it may not be completely. If you search the internet for VUUPC, you'll see some links on how to remove it. But my biggest concern... VUUPC says access your PC from anywhere. The idea is, and I'm wondering if this guy who sold it to you put this on here, because then he wants to turn on your camera and microphone and check what's going on. So I'm a little nervous about where you got this computer and what this person, is it a company? Well, is it a known company? Or I'm a little worried about, yeah. The fact that you got it on eBay means that there's some stuff on here. This is essentially a backdoor. Did it come with, I bet it didn't, but I'm going to ask you, restore disks or a Windows install disk? No.
I really don't know what that is.
Didn't have any disks with it, did it?
No.
Yeah. I think what you really want to do at this point, and this is actually fairly serious, is start over. You can keep that PC, but you want to get a Windows 7. I bet you it's not a licensed Windows 7 either. And I think what you do want to do is buy a licensed version of Windows 7, format the drive. I mean, really, seriously, format that drive, erase everything, and put a fresh, known good copy of Windows on there. My suspicion is that the person who sold you this, it's probably not a licensed copy of Windows to begin with. And I'm pretty convinced that he's put malware, or at least adware, on there as well. So that computer is infected.
Oh, okay.
Thanks to the chat room for pointing me in the right direction. If you have somebody trustworthy that you can bring it to and say, hey, I want to put Windows 7 on this, he can wipe it and reinstall. Don't trust somebody who says, oh, I can get rid of that, because what you don't know is what else that guy's put on there. Basically, when you buy a computer from somebody like from somewhere like eBay, you're really buying it from an individual. If it's not Dell or Lenovo or HP, like a big computer company, and you're getting it direct from them or a trusted retailer, if you're buying it on an auction site, I don't know what that is. Very often, in cases like this, you don't have an official copy of Windows at all. He's hacked it. He's put other stuff on there. Read the comments about the seller on eBay. You might want to ask him some questions. The fact that you've got VUUPC on there is not very good. I hope you didn't spend too much money on this computer. At this point, you really need to erase it and start over. This is not good. Always buy from a licensed reseller or the company itself. I'm a little nervous that you got it on eBay. You know, it was a great price, wasn't it? Torbeck points out in the chat room, and he's right, you could call Microsoft Windows support. You know, they make sure it's genuine. They have a helpline that you call, and if you think you've got a pirated copy of Windows, they can tell you. They can tell you who the – in fact, you might want to save that information about the seller. Let them know. Microsoft doesn't like this. Obviously, it's bad for business. And I think they'd want to know about it. The hardware's probably okay, although we don't know. I'm more worried about what's on the software side of it. This View PC, which you've got, because you know, lets somebody access all your files, copy them, lets them turn on your camera and watch you. This is not a good thing to have on your system. I'm a little nervous about the whole thing. So let's turn it off and get it erased. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Prosper, prosper.com. Prosper is a new kind of lending that is very cool. Again, something that could only happen on the internet. This is the kind of company that an open and free internet creates. The idea is Prosper brings people who are looking to borrow money together with people who have money to lend. It makes a marketplace. And it's a great idea. Eliminate the bank. You don't have to go into a bank. You can get loans up to $35,000 as fast as 72 hours at a very affordable price. Prosper.com. What would you do with that 35 grand? Would you pay off high-rate credit cards? Would you start a business? Do a home improvement project? Let's start by just go to Prosper.com. You'll fill out a very simple online application. Give them a few details. You will get your rate online instantly. Right there. That's a huge change from the way we used to do it. And by the way, doing that, checking that rate will not affect your credit score. You know, it's just an informational thing. Prosper offers low fixed rates. These are unsecured personal loans. You do not need collateral. Multi-year terms are available. This is perfect for a home improvement. Perfect for almost anything you want to do. It's Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. It's an innovative peer-to-peer lending process. No outrageous fees. No rising interest rates. You will not set foot in a bank. You can do this all online as easy as pie. More than 2 million members now at Prosper.com, both lenders and borrowers alike. They have $1 billion in funded loans. This is really exciting, really empowering. Prosper.com/twit. Check your score right now. And for a limited time, when you get a loan on Prosper.com/twit, you're going to get a $50 Amazon gift card. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days. And a $50 Amazon gift card for you when you get a loan. Prosper.com. Not affiliated with Amazon, of course. But for more information about the gift card, go to Prosper.com/twit. We thank him so much for supporting the Tech Guy Podcast. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you have a question, if you want to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. I spent a little bit of time, like a lot of time last hour, talking about these new proposed FCC rules that would destroy the open internet we have come to rely on. And I really want to encourage you to visit techguylabs.com, where I've linked to an article from the Stanford Law School about what the proposal is and what we can do about it. And absolutely, it's not over yet, but we've got to fight for the internet to protect it. So important. I admit, I have a dog in this hunt. I run a small internet broadcasting operation that relies on access to you, to the end users, to the listeners. You can watch us live. And if Comcast or some other internet service provider comes to me and said, well, you know, we're thrilled to have you on our network, and for only $1 per user, we'll be glad to give you full speed access. I have to say no. I can't afford it. Even if that's, according to the FCC, commercially reasonable, it would put me out of business. So I do care very much. And you should care too. Sure, YouTube will continue, Netflix will continue, Hulu Plus will continue. Those guys have plenty of money, they can afford it. But that's not what makes the internet the rich, diverse, and powerful, and exciting, and innovative place it is and has been. And that will go away. 8888 Ask Leo. Mike is next in Glendale, California. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I have a question. I recently came up with an idea for an app, but I have no idea where someone would begin to make one, or what sort of patenting issues I would probably run into. So I was wondering if you have any advice on just how to get going about this.
Well, you and about 1,000,000,000,100,000,000,000 other people, because, of course, as soon as WhatsApp sold to Facebook for $16 billion, it's like a gold rush. It's a modern gold rush. It's like 1849 all over again, when people came from all over the world to little San Francisco because they said, there's gold in them Nar Hills, and they bought themselves a pickaxe, and they bought themselves some Levi jeans, and they went up there and they got themselves a claim and they looked for gold. And some of them got rich, but mostly who got rich is Levi's. The pickaxe sellers.
That way, you know, nowadays with all the technology.
Somebody, there's going to be another WhatsApp and another WhatsApp after that. There's no question that there is money in apps. There's a lot of money in apps. But do remember, it's only the top 1/100th of 1% that make money. Most apps, and there are millions, right? Most apps don't. Right. It's a small portion that do. Most of them are made by big companies who have marketing wherewithal. So I just want to give you a little reality. On the other hand, I don't know if you've watched on HBO, they've got this great new show called Silicon Valley. And you know, it's a comedy about, you know, by Mike Judge, the guy who did the Office Space. And it's funny because it's a comedy about Silicon Valley. And everywhere these guys go, from the guy at Staples, the clerk at Staples, to his doctor, they've all got an app. I got this app that'll tell you ahead of time if you're going to have a heart attack, and all I need is $100,000. You want to invest? As soon as they find out he's got money, you want to invest?
Yeah, maybe they should put me on that show.
The clerk at Staples says, "I have a great idea for an app. You get out of the car and you write down. You have this special app that tells you where you parked, and you'll never lose your car again." And the hero of the show says, how is that different from just writing it down on a piece of paper? It's an app. It's different because it's an app. So having a great idea for an app, and I'm not going to ask you what your idea is because I'm sure you want to protect it.
I do.
Easy to have a great idea. There's a lot of distance to go between having a great idea and making $16 billion or even $100,000 or even $5,000. And what that's going to involve is, of course, the idea. I've always thought ideas are common. I'd have ideas every morning in the shower. The issue is implementation. Now, if you can find programmers, you go to Elance.com or StackExchange.com. There's programmers galore. These are guys who have the skills to make an app but don't have the idea for the app. So you team up. Or more likely, they've realized this and they've decided to become Levi's. Yeah, I'll make you an app, no problem. And they make you an app. You know, now you got to go out and market it, sell it, get it on the app store. And maybe you'll make some money. But one thing's for sure, the programmer got his paycheck. It's easy to find that. You don't just want a programmer, by the way. If you're not good at design, you want a designer. Because nowadays, if an app doesn't look good, people aren't even going to try it. You probably have to have a strategy for marketing it. Now, it's going to help if the app is very narrow, if it has a very narrow focus. If it's for neurosurgeons, well, it's easier to reach that group because that's a narrow group than it is if it's a parking application, which is for everybody. How do you reach everybody? You know, it's expensive. Right. You're not going to buy Super Bowl ads.
Right.
So that's kind of all generic advice. But I'll give you a good example. My friend Kevin Rose, who was working with me on the TV show that I used to do called The Screensavers. And frankly, he was just he was our IT guy. But he used a news site that he liked a lot, as we all did, and some of us still do, called Slashdot. And the editors would pick the top stories and people would comment on them. And he said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this tech news. What if people voted on the stories, and then the stories that people were most interested in rose to the top, so it'd be kind of like a crowdsourcing news site. So he hired a programmer he'd never met up in Canada. He found him online. They wrote a thing called a site called Digg, D-I-G-G. And it wasn't too long after that, maybe a few years after that, that he was on the cover of Business Week, the $60 million man. It's a famous success, which later tanked. But that's another that's another story for another day. So it's certainly possible to have an idea and not be a programmer. Kevin's got a good sense, though, of what works, what doesn't work. He's developed it. He actually now works for Google Ventures, where he helps small new startups get on their feet. He guides them, helps them with things like, well, this would be better if you did this. So he's clearly learns a thing or two. I strongly recommend you. You pursue it, but also with your eyes wide open, that you understand that this is there's no app that is so good that it's just an automatic hit. It just, it's so rare. There have been a few, and I think of the ones that, think of the WhatsApp, $16 billion. What was special about WhatsApp? You got me. Right? Have you used it? It's a chat app.
I have used it.
There's a million chat apps. It does nothing different than any other chat app. As it turns out, it handled a couple of things really well. It handled left to right and right to left languages like Hebrew and Arabic handled well. Handled diacritical, accents and tildes and stuff. Handled it better than other apps. So it gained a huge international following because it worked.
Right.
But, I mean, really, was it beautiful? No. It looked just like every other chat app. Instagram. What made Instagram so great? Filters. That's it. Filters. And they sold for $1 billion, which at the time we thought, boy, that's a lot of money. Turns out, chicken feed. What made Flappy Bird so successful? That guy is making tens of thousands of dollars a day. It's a free app, but he's got ads in it. Young guy, Vietnamese developer. What made it so successful? Who knows? It's a stupid game.
In fact,
but so it's very hard to put lightning in a bottle. Very hard to figure it out. But if you think you've got it, go for it, because who knows? You could be calling me back in 3 years and say, hey, Leo, that idea, you know the one I called you about? I'm a billionaire. I'm on a boat, man. I'm calling you for my boat.
Well, maybe that's getting a little out of myself.
So I think it's a really good thing. This is what excites me about the internet, is that anybody can have an idea. The internet makes it possible to distribute. There are outlets. Apple with its iPhone, and then later Google with Android, have created a huge market for apps. I think it's pretty clear apps are the thing right now. I'm thinking I need an app. Anybody want to write it for me? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. I strongly encourage anybody who wants to get into this business to get into it. But do it with your eyes open. It is a little bit of a gold rush right now. It would really help. And if you're a youngster thinking about a career, high school or college, learn how to program, learn how to design, learn how to market. I think one of the reasons that I was talking about this the other day with a dad of my son. I was back at, my son is a freshman at Colorado University at Boulder, where I'm proud to say he's studying journalism. Good luck with that. But I didn't have the heart to tell him. Oh, journalism's dead. But no, he'll find something, and he really loves it, which is great. That's the most important thing. But I was back there a couple of days ago for his frat. He's in Pi Kappa Phi. Had a frat dad weekend, father and son weekend. I was talking to another father about going into a computer store. I won't name names, Best Buy. And hearing just mindless foolishness coming out of the clerks. Now, I'm sure there's some smart guys working at Best Buy and gals. But I said, yeah, it really does seem to be kind of a problem. It's hard to get good advice in a computer store. It's hard to get a computer store, for that matter. It's one of the reasons Apple and Microsoft and Sony and even Google now have their own retail outlets, because they at least can control, you know, the messaging and staff them with people who know what they're talking about. But I said, I'm not surprised. Look at all these bright young minds here at CU Boulder. If they're smart, they're learning these skills, and they're not going to work for Best Buy. They're probably not even going to work for Facebook or Apple or Microsoft. All of these companies are have huge demand for brains. And if you're really good, you start your own company. You get out of college, you get out of school, have the skills, you start your own company. And you can. The cost of creating an app, putting it out there, you spin up servers at Google with Google Code or at Amazon, very low cost. Used to be, you know, you'd have to have venture capital, millions of dollars to support those servers. When my friend Kevin Rose started Dig, he had to go out and seek millions of dollars in venture funding because you had to have a lot of servers so that people could go to the website and use it. And that was expensive. Not anymore. Cost you almost nothing to make an app. So if you got the skills, and now's the time to get them, go out and do it. And maybe just start your own business. And if the business fails and you try again and it fails again, you can always get a job at Facebook. Those guys are desperate. Michael, Niagara Falls, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Leo. It's an honor.
Welcome.
I've got a question for you. I've got a computer running Windows XP that I would love to set up with a limited user account.
Good idea.
The problem is, ever since I've had this computer, I've never been able to have two user accounts coexist. The computer will crash, it will lock up, it
really?
Will freeze. Yes, I formatted it many times. It just will not handle two user accounts.
Well, you always have at least two because you have a hidden administrator account plus your account. So there's at least two, but maybe there's no. Maybe you can't make three. That's bizarre.
Okay.
I never heard this before.
I wanted to ask you about that hidden administrator account.
Yes.
Would this be a good workaround to boot into that hidden administrator account and toggle the limited user on and off as needed?
Yeah, in general, this is a bad idea, but you, I mean, since you have no other option, although I would love to know what's wrong. You've reinstalled Windows from a clean install and it's still?
Yes, several times.
It's very odd.
It doesn't matter if I put passwords on or... on the accounts or have no passwords.
I'd love to know why it's doing that. I mean, that's probably something we should address because that sounds serious in some way that I cannot fathom why that happens. On the other hand, yes, you do have that limited or hidden administrator account. In fact, if you Google it, you'll see ways to enable it. But in general, it's a bad idea. You want to keep that account kind of pristine. It's there for troubleshooting. You don't really want to start using it. And you would be, even though you're going to stick with your old account, you're going to make it limited user, you would be. I cannot figure out why this is happening. And it's just odd. There must be some software, probably a security program you're putting on there that's preventing it.
Okay, it's always had Kaspersky antivirus on it.
Have you tried creating the second account first thing?
Yes.
And it doesn't do it?
No.
What does it do?
It'll lock up. When I try to log off one account, it'll just lock. It'll just freeze. The screen partially disappears at the bottom. Like there's no taskbar icon, and the only way out of it is a hard shutdown.
I am baffled. What you're doing is what we've talked about a little bit, and I'm getting a little heat for. I've said if you are using an XP machine, as you know, second Tuesday of this month was the last update you'll ever get from Microsoft. And that means you're going to be potentially using an operating system that has severe holes in it that Microsoft knows about but isn't fixing. It's a little frustrating to me that Microsoft knows about them, is fixing them for some customers but not for all, but it is a 13-year-old operating system. The best advice is, and especially on this computer, which sounds like there's something kind of a little suspicious, is that get a new computer. But obviously not everybody can afford a new computer. The second best advice would be to install Linux on it. Not try to use XP, but use a free operating system like Linux that's more secure, that's being kept up to date. But if you need to keep XP, and there are lots of reasons why somebody might need to, then you're doing what I would suggest, which is run as a limited user. Do not run as an administrator. But to do that, you need an administrative account. To make sure that you have Kaspersky or some other antivirus that's being kept up to date. Don't use Internet Explorer. It hasn't been updated on XP in years. Use Chrome. Google said we'll keep that up to date at least through 2015. And, of course, be very, very careful as you surf the Internet. I am baffled about this account thing, and it concerns me a little bit. I'm just not sure what's going on. It is, I believe, possible if you're very, very careful to use Windows XP, but it isn't my first suggestion. You might try a Linux on here. Then you can have multiple accounts. You still, you know, you don't have to operate as an administrator. That's always a bad idea. I can't think of why multiple accounts would be a problem, especially on a fresh machine. If anybody knows, let us know, and we'll put the this call and the notes up on our website, techguylabs.com. You can comment there as well. And maybe check back in a couple of days, Michael, see if anybody's got an answer for you. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our Tech Guy show brought to you today by Gazelle.com. You may have noticed, perhaps you've observed, that I tend to get new gadgets all the time. How does he do it, you might ask? Well, it's my job, but also I can always get rid of the old stuff at Gazelle.com. Gazelle is a place where you can sell your old iPhone, Samsung phone, BlackBerry, Blueberry, Orangeberry, whatever you got. Even old Apple computers like a MacBook, a Mac Pro, an Apple TV. They'll buy iPods. They'll buy tablets from Apple, Amazon, Asus, Google, Microsoft, and Samsung. And they'll give you good money, too. Let's say, hey, I've got an old iPhone 5. I'm ready to upgrade to the iPhone 5S. How much do I have to pay for that? How much can I get for that? Well, let's get an offer here. It's in good condition, all right? Unlocked, $225. Why, that'll pay for the whole deal. They even tell you how to unlock it. It's not hard. $185 if you're not unlocked. But you can unlock it. Now, here's the key. This is good for 30 days. See, it says ship us your device by May 25th, 30 days from now. That is really cool. That means you can go through all of your devices, get a quote for each, and lock it in. I'll tell you one thing I know for sure. These prices are not going up. Stuff is less valuable all the time. So get that lock in right now. Maybe you want that new HTC One. Wouldn't you love that? Can you sell your old M7? I'd love to do that. Let's see how much they're going to give me. There's the 1X, the Titan. There's the 8X, my old Windows phone. There it is. 64 gig, HTC One from $150. Notice the iPhone's worth more. They'll even buy broken or cracked iPhones or iPads. But I'm going to take it, $150. Pull the trigger, and they'll send you a box with a prepaid mailer. If you forget to wipe the data, their data experts will do that. And then you'll get a check, a PayPal credit, or if you're an Amazon user, you might as well get the Amazon gift card because they'll bump it up by an extra 5%. Risk-free. All offers good for 30 days. Gazelle will wipe the data for free. They have paid out more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers. I should add up how much we've got from Gazelle. Hundreds and hundreds of bucks. Free shipping, too. Fast processing. Try it today. Gazelle.com. Just get a quote. You might be surprised how much your Apple or Android device is worth at Gazelle.com. You hear that music, you know what that means. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guru, our digital photographer extraordinaire, and he joins us each and every week. This week, we're going to do something kind of fun. We're going to review our assignment. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
First, before we do our assignment, you're going to Everest.
I am going to Everest.
You lucky
dog. The fourth time in 6 years that we're taking, I think this time, about 15 photographers up to pretty high, 18,000 feet. That's how high we're going to go.
Wow.
Yes, wow. I've been...
And why photographers in Everest? What, I don't understand. What is it, beautiful up there or something?
Oh, of course. It's amazing up there. The route that we're going is one that's not traveled much. It's called the Gokyo Valley. And there are no cars, no roads, just people and yaks and people.
Oh,
and
yaks are notoriously just photogenic.
And then absolutely...
There's nothing like a yak.
And then you have this enormous amount of huge mountains around you, the nature, and last but not least, the most important bit is the people there. I mean, they're just amazing people. The Sherpa, the other people who live there, it's just, that's what I come back for, the people, because they're so genuine, you know? They take you for what you are, not for what you have or what you do. So it's pretty much, it's wonderful. It is wonderful.
So how come for a month, do you have to, does it take a while to do that? You have to acclimate and stuff or?
Well, it takes a while to get there. We'll meet the group in Kathmandu, and then we'll hike up. Well, we'll fly up to Lukla Airport, which is a small, tiny mountain airport. Look it up on YouTube. It looks very dangerous.
Right, and, that's good. Is it dangerous?
Well, you know, bit of an adventure. They had two accidents there in 50 years, I think.
Oh,
so
nothing. Safe as houses, yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll hike up for, this time I think it's about 2 weeks, but maybe a bit longer. I think it's longer than 2 weeks, to about Everest Base Camp, which is beyond 18,000 feet. And then we'll take another route down again, which is the one that most people take. So we'll have pretty much a big loop there, and then we'll fly back into Kathmandu and spend a few more days there in the city, which is a huge contrast to the mountains. I mean, the city is loud and smelly and still beautiful, but it's very, very different from what you experience up there in the mountains.
Yeah.
So,
well, have a wonderful time.
Thank you. So I'll be gone for a month. I'll be back on June the 1st. So.
Jiminy Christmas. Well, meanwhile, yes. We've got a little assignment to handle. Once a month, Chris gives us a suggestion for something we might want to take pictures of. And while this is not a competition or in any, you know, there's no reward for this, but you do gives you an excuse to go out there and take pictures. So we asked people about a month ago to take pictures illustrating the word or idea flat.
Mm-hmm.
And did you get some good suggestions?
Well, first of all, we got about 175 people who participated, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And the reward, I think there is a bit of a reward, which is you get your if you get picked, you get your picture shown here on the show.
Neat.
So I've chosen three, and the first one is by Ali 2017, and it's called Perspective. Mm. It's a very simple kind of picture. I mean, what we're looking at is a wall made of boards, and then the camera apparently is resting on the ground. So it's kind of on the top side, on the top half you see the wall, and the bottom half you see the concrete type of ground. And I love it for its simplicity and for its change in perspective. That's why it's called Perspective, right? It's not your usual perspective unless you, I don't know, had too much Jägermeister or something. But other than that, it is it's just an unusual perspective.
Yeah. I like the textures and the colors, the wood of the fence, the sand of the ground. That's very pretty.
Yep, it's got this level of simplicity, so sometimes I like these a lot.
Then we go to Josh 3326, and his picture is flat.
Well, it's a flat, I don't know, flat. It's a flat surface of drawers that are painted in different colors, primary colors, yellow, blue, green, and red. The title is Image, which is very inventive.
Okay, can't do that. We want real titles here. Let's give him a better title.
Definitely want real titles.
At the morgue.
What does it look like that for you?
No. No, actually, it looks like lockers or something.
It's too colorful for that.
Yeah.
The reason why it kind of jumped at me, even looking at a small thumbnail, was that it has all these primary colors in there. Red, green, blue, that's the primary colors that our cameras see. That's the sensor that has red, green, and blue pixels, and there's the color channels. And for some reason, pictures that have all these color channels in them have something that appeals to people when they look at them. So that feels like a complete picture, you know?
Yeah, I really like the color choice in here.
And I like the textures as well with the color.
I like
kind
stuff
of,
that's
chipping off.
Beat up.
It's a beat up.
James Terrell's, the third and final picture.
Has a proper title.
It's Twilight Epiphany.
Exactly, Twilight Epiphany. It is, it says Rice University, so it's a building there. And it's a picture taken at dawn, I would think.
I'm thinking James Thurrell is the architect or something associated with the building, because the name of the photographer is Airy.
True.
A-R-I-E.
True.
Yeah.
So Airy took the picture, and the title is James Thurrell's Twilight Epiphany.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful piece of architecture. It's got this flat roof on the top, and then it's been taken at dawn or dusk, and it's lit from below, so there's this red surface that is lit in a very soft kind of light. And I like the way I like the way this is all soft and almost pastel colors. So you have the pink light, you have the bluish sky. There's a bit of a hint of green in the grass. So again, a kind of red, green, blue kind of thing. It's very central, very symmetrical, which for this kind of a picture works really well. I mean, I keep telling people, try to not compose central pictures, try to move the subject a bit out of the middle to give it a bit more interest. But for some pictures, for example, like this, the symmetry is what makes it for me. So good job.
Terrell like apparently is a installation artist who works with light. Now, let me ask you this. It's kind of cheating, isn't it? Because really, the artist here is Terrell. At least Ari gave him credit. can you give the photographer credit? I guess this is technically difficult.
Definitely, it's technically not easy. And then, oh, come on. I mean, good architecture doesn't look good from every angle. So there are so many angles that this would look horrible from. And finding a good angle and positioning the camera, you can show this picture in a million different ways, this building. And I think this is a very good way to show it. So I like it.
If you want to know more about Chris Marquardt's works, Tips from the Top Floor is his podcast. You can go to discoverthetopfloor.com. That's also where he'll have information about future Everest trips.
Yes.
Leave
Everest
us
and Darjeeling. Darjeeling.
You're going on the Darjeeling Express.
First flush harvest Darjeeling, a tea-themed tour.
I want to go.
Just brand new, just out. Just out.
Oh, when are you going to do that?
In May next year, 2015.
Oh, I have time to plan for it.
Go ahead and do that.
I'd like to do that.
Love to have you. It's going to be awesome.
Chris, leave us with an assignment for next month, and you'll be back in a month to review.
Yep, next assignment, and that's pretty much good timing, is rounded.
Well, we had flat, though this would be the opposite. Rounded.
Could mean a lot of different things.
What does it mean to you? We're not going to tell you ahead of time. Rounded. So here's how this works. You take pictures. The whole point of it, it's not a competition. It's really just to give you an excuse to go out and take images. So go out and take some pictures. Upload them to our tech guy group on Flickr. Renee Silverman will welcome you. You could do one picture a week, and in about a month, we'll pick three to review. Thank you, Chris. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech... My voice is changing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., and Canada. Back to the phones we go. And Kevin, who's in West Babylon, New York. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Leo. I'm a long-time listener and actually a second-time caller.
Great. Welcome.
I didn't tell Heather this long story, but I have a friend who has a hard drive that's not working correctly. So I figured, let me use Spinrite, since I know you tout it and praise everything about it. So when I was using it, it came up with a error code saying diffusion overflow error.
So what's going on? Let's not worry about that so much as what's going on with your friend's hard drive. Tell me why you think there's a problem with your friend's hard drive.
Well, I know I know the hard drive is failing because it kept going to blue screen. It's a relatively new laptop with Windows 7, and it went right to blue screen, and that's how I knew it was like a blue screen of death and hard drive failing.
Well, did it say your hard drive has failed?
Yeah, when I opened the...
Can you boot it up?
Not right now.
So it won't boot at all. What happens to it when you turn it on?
When I turn it on, it goes to the Windows 7 startup,
yeah.
And then it goes right to the blue screen.
So there's a lot of things that could be wrong with it. You're right, a hard drive could be one, but also a corrupted boot file could be another. It's kind of a pain in a laptop to fix the hard drive because it's inside there. It's kind of inside there. Might be, if you can easily remove it, it might be a good idea. I love these things. In fact, if you do this kind of stuff, you're obviously a troubleshooter for your friends. A number of companies sell them. I buy mine from NewerTech. It's a USB drive interface. So it's kind of, they call it a universal interface. And what it does is it lets you connect any drive, including a laptop drive, as a USB device. They call it the Swiss Army knife of connectivity, and I think it really is. It will connect on one end to your another computer via USB. And then, now, and this isn't intended for day-to-day use. This is for exactly this kind of situation. The other side will connect to a serial ATA port, to an IDE port, to a laptop drive, which is a single connector for data and power. It'll do all kinds of drives. And it basically turns these bare bones drives into USB drives. Now, because there's circuitry on the drive and so forth, you're not going to leave it like that. But it is a way to take the drive out of the laptop and diagnose it. And if you do that and you can read the drive, you can see what's going on, then it seems to me that maybe it's not a drive problem, but just a bad file. The other ways to diagnose this without getting the drive out: boot into safe mode, see if it'll do that. If it boots into safe mode, then it means it's a bad driver. Your video driver's corrupted or something like that. It's always hard to tell if, you know, when a system won't start up properly, what's wrong? Could be a lot of things. So I wouldn't assume that it's the hard drive. This is this little NewerTech device is $20, something like that. It's just, you know, it's inexpensive, and they're really useful to have around the house. Now, if you think you have problems with this drive, you can then run SpinRite on it via USB. It's always better to run it directly by the connector, but you can run it via USB. I don't, you know, SpinRite has very good tech support, so if you think there's something wrong with SpinRite, then I would call their tech support number. They have one guy, but he's great, and he'll tell you. Somebody in the chat room said it might be an ACPI issue. SpinRite can crash out on that. But I don't think to a, because you're getting a blue screen of death doesn't mean, that's not diagnostic information enough to know what's wrong. It just means the computer's crashing on boot. Try in safe mode, see if that'll work. You can also, and this is a very good thing, another thing that everybody should have is a boot disk. And there are a number of boot disk makers. Some of them have pirated software on them that I don't recommend. There are a number of boot disk makers that will allow you to create a disk that you can put in this laptop, start up from the boot disk, and then run drive diagnostics, take a look at the drive itself. In other words, if there seems to be an issue with the computer, what we'd like to do is start it up and see what's going on. A boot disk is so handy to have, because especially with a laptop, if the thing won't start up, what are you going to do? There's a Bartz PE boot disk. There's a number of good ones. And what they have is a lot of utilities on them. And usually it's not a Windows boot. It's like either DOS or Linux. And it'll get you into the boot situation, and then you can see what's going on. Sometimes it's not even worth the effort. You know, SpinRite is, what, $80 or $90? You can get a new hard drive for that. Sometimes, unless there's data on there you absolutely need, the best thing to do is just go buy a new hard drive, reinstall Windows. Somebody in the chat room said, SpinRite, which is my friend Steve Gibson's program, is meant for people who have valuable data but were too dumb to back it up. SpinRite's a great program. It is a very useful program to keep your hard drives working and flowing. But it's true. If you've got a good backup, no problem. Let's move on. Jordan in Chicago. Where are you going to go, Jordan? You traveling?
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Where are you going?
Heading out to Maui, Hawaii.
Oh, you're trying to make me jealous. So you don't have a camera at all, huh?
You know, I'm taking photos that I really enjoy off my iPhone 5S. Yeah. You know, they look great.
Yeah, but there's limits. You can't zoom in. You could have more resolution, so they don't print out at big sizes. Great.
Exactly. And my my beautiful wife, you know, she doesn't you know, like to be captured just on a phone cam.
So no, she wants to know that you care enough to use the very best.
Yes, sir. So I'm looking for something a little higher up.
What's your price range?
You could recommend. looking about $1,000 to $1,500.
Oh, good. That's a goodly price. If you could spend that much and you're fairly serious, I love the idea of having interchangeable lens camera. Because, you know, point and shoots have one fixed lens. They do have zoom. But you can't, when you can change lenses, you can really change things up. You can get a wide angle. You can get a fast lens for low light situations. You can get a long telephoto. You can get longer zooms. It just gives you more quality in the image, and because the sensors are bigger and the lenses are better, and it gives you more flexibility. You're in the price range where you absolutely could go with an interchangeable lens camera, either a DSLR, like the Canon Rebels, which are great, the EOS Rebels, the T4i, really nice cameras. You're well within that price range. Or my recommendation, it's the camera that we took to Europe with us in the fall, last fall. It's lightweight. Interchangeable lens. It's a Micro Four Thirds camera. That's a particular kind of sensor. Doesn't have a mirror, so they're smaller, more compact than the DSLRs. And Micro Four Thirds is an industry standard. So a number of companies, many companies, make Micro Four Thirds lenses. That's nice. You buy a Canon T4i, you're going to only be able to use Canon lenses. But when you buy a Micro Four Thirds, you've got a broad variety. My favorite Micro Four Thirds camera is the Olympus. The one I use is the OMD EM5. Lisa has an EM1. Excellent cameras. And the kit lenses are a great start. Perfect for a trip to Maui. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We were talking about cameras with our caller from last caller from last hour. There are so many good choices. It's almost impossible to go wrong. You can overspend for sure. But I just think there's so many good choices out there. Digital photography has come of age. There's no doubt about it. You know, for a long time, professional photographers who were film shooters just... It's not good enough. Not yet good enough. 2008. Not yet good enough. 2009. 2010. Whoa. 2011. It's good enough. 2012. It's better. 2013. Oh, I hate you digital guys. 2014. Where do I sell my cameras? It is really remarkable how good they've gotten. And it's not merely the number of megapixels, but just the accuracy of the reproduction. And the software tools now are fabulous. Whether you use Lightroom and Photoshop or Apple's Aperture, you really, it's an amazing, amazing thing. So point and shoot, I like the Canon Elfs. The power shots are very good. They're very compact. They do a great job. Fuji makes some excellent point and shoot cameras. Sony, I love the. I become a fan of the Sony cameras. I think they're coming on strong. But I have to say, Micro Four Thirds is a really excellent format. Big variety of lenses, big variety of cameras, fairly affordable. It's a great system for kind of somebody who doesn't want to be a pro, maybe, but wants some real capabilities. And talk about compact. Very, very compact. No mirror means you can just carry them around, and they look. It's nice because you're less likely to get ripped off too. They look like you know, old-fashioned cameras. I'm a big fan of the Olympus, the OMD. As I said, I use an EM5. Lisa, my girlfriend, uses an EM1, and just gets. In fact, if you want to see some of her shots, her blog is www.lifeoflisa.com, and you can get a kind of a good idea of what. A talented amateur can do with that camera. Really a nice camera. You know, one of the reasons I think people are getting better and better at photography is digital allows you to take many, many images. We had a parade yesterday here in Petaluma, our famous, world famous Butter and Eggs Day. It's a great little parade. It's a small town, and it's a small town parade, and it's wonderful. But she went out and she took 1,500 pictures in one day. But that's not unusual. Pros do the same thing, thousands of pictures, because it's digital. You can shoot a lot of pictures. You can try a lot of things. Go back. It's very easy with the software to go through your pictures. She uses iPhoto on a Mac. Quick. She's very quick. Reject, reject, reject. That's one. Reject, reject, reject. Out of it, she probably got 20 or 30 really great shots. And that may seem like, well, that's a crazy ratio. And certainly if you were paying for film and processing, it would be. Digital, there's no cost at all. No cost at all. Take 1,500 shots. If that's how many it takes, go ahead. And you learn. That's how you learn. What made that shot work? What made that shot not work? Oh, I wish I'd done this differently. I have to also say, with the resolution of these modern cameras, like the Olympus OMD, you can crop considerably, which gives you a lot of flexibility. You can take an image that has more than you need, but there's enough resolution in the shot that you can crop out stuff, zoom in on it, and still get a great shot. I have to say, I feel like the cameras in most people's phones these days are so good now that there isn't as much of a market for the inexpensive point-and-shoot camera. You've got a camera phone in your pocket that's probably 90% of what you need. And then if you want to go to the next step, then you probably should go to the, you know, $600, $700, $800 camera and get a really good camera with interchangeable lenses, start investing in lenses. And then, then you can really expand beyond that. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the number to call. Jesse in Marietta, California. You're next. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
This is my first time calling, a long-time listener, and I just bought a home, and I signed my papers Monday, and I'm wanting to get solar right off the bat. And I was wondering if you can recommend a good solar company.
Good on you. Now, I can't. I don't know, although I think this is a great idea. And I can talk a little bit about solar. It's a little bit outside my realm. You know, if you call the home improvement show, you might get better advice. But I've been looking into it myself, and I think we are really getting closer and closer to solar making sense. Now, right now it makes sense because you get subsidies from the state and federal governments in most places that will make it cost effective. What you're looking at, of course, is how much am I going to save on power and then multiplying it, dividing it by the cost, total cost of the system after rebates and subsidies. And that'll tell you how many years it's going to take you to pay back. And in many of these systems now, we're talking no more than 5 or 10 years to pay back. I mean, where you start really saving money. You don't save money at first because you're paying off the expense of putting in the panels. What we're waiting for, and I think we're right on the edge of, is more effective, more efficient solar panels. The issue really is efficiency. And efficiency of solar panels has been really pretty low, 5, 10, 15%. As the efficiency goes up, it means you get more power out of your panel, and then it makes it much more cost effective. And I think we're right on the verge of this. I really do. There are some things to consider with solar. Keeping them clean is a big issue. A lot of people put them on the roof. It's hard to keep a solar panel clean. Of course, efficiency goes way down as it accumulates dust and debris. You are going to want to be able to clean them. So if you have the space, you're going to want to put that solar panel somewhere you can get to. The roof may not be the best spot. I think they're excellent companies. I don't know the name of a good one, to be honest with you. I do think that if you can wait, it might be. I'm probably going to wait because I feel like in the next few years, we're going to see some significant improvements in efficiency. There's stuff out there already, almost on the market. And if you can get that efficiency up to 25, 30, 40, 50%, fewer panels, more power, much better amortization. The cost comes way, way down. 8888. So good luck. I think you're doing the right thing, Jesse. I want to do that too. You know, I'm on a well. I figure if I get solar, and then all I need is a garden in the back and a pigsty, and I'm off the grid. Get rid of the credit cards, the internet. You'll never take me alive. Wendy in Santa Ana, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Welcome.
Frustrated with the computer. Thank you.
Oh, welcome to the club. I think we all are.
Yeah. I have a Lenovo G580.
Okay.
It's a year and a half old.
Yeah.
And just a few months after I got it, I was HDMI port went out. There was no signal from the computer to the television.
Yeah.
And it went back to the manufacturer, and the motherboard was replaced.
Good. Well, I'm glad they did that. That's good.
Yeah, well, it's been working fine since then, but now that it's a year and a half old and it's out of warranty, the same exact thing happened again.
Ah.
And I don't know what to do. I have restored it. I've backed up everything to an external hard drive. I've saved all my information, and I've restored the computer. And when I turn it on, the television monitor will show the Windows logo, and then it says retrieving signal, or retrieving data, and then no signal.
That's interesting. So you are getting a signal through there. That's very interesting. Because you wouldn't see the Windows, you wouldn't see anything on the TV screen if the physical port were broken. Were you, the last time, did you see anything at all on the screen? Do you remember?
I was watching television off the computer the other night, and the signal went away. And when I restarted the computer, it came back on for about an hour and a half, and then it went out again.
That does sound like a hardware problem. And that's one you're going to have to get Lenovo to fix, I'm afraid. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, I had to run on our caller at the bottom of the previous caller, but I think it's almost certain that's a hardware error. It was her HDMI port failed. She rebooted the machine. It worked for another hour and a half, then failed again. That's not software. That is almost certainly either a chip that's dying because of the heat, perhaps a bad solder. Although nowadays, on the way laptops are made, it's unlikely there's even it's all surface mount. I think it's probably a chip that's flaky. It's the second time it's failed on you too. That's very frustrating. Really frustrating. I don't blame you for being a little bit upset about that. And now that it's out of warranty, I don't even know what you do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Howard is next in Coushatta, Louisiana. Is that how you say it, Coushatta?
Coushatta. Very, very close, sir.
Ah, where in Louisiana are you?
Northwest area, about 45 miles south of Shreveport.
I love Louisiana, but mostly I've been to, New Orleans, so I got to see the rest of it.
The north section's totally different than south section.
Yeah.
Well, what it is, not by choice, but I'm a cord cutter, and I've got one of those little cheap antennas. It looks like it's got a C and a straight line.
Yeah.
But the cable is, like, fixed in there, and I need to get something better. What on the inexpensive end for antennas can I do to get a decent signal? And I'm, like I say, a good 50, 60 miles from the antennas, well, from the stations, and I've got, like, about a 20, 22-foot pole.
Yeah, well, that's good you have the pole, because you are fairly distant, so it's going to be weak. Now, we always send people to antennaweb.org. That's run by the Consumer Electronics Association and the National Association of Broadcasters. That has a zip code by zip code breakdown of, your signal situation and which kind of antenna would be best. But there's an even better site, which I'm going to bring down right now, because every time I mention it, the site goes down. It's called TV Fool, TVFool.com. So it's hopeless to try to go there now, because everybody listening to the show is going to go there, and it's going to break the site again. Those poor guys, every time I mention it. But this is a great place to go see maps, coverage maps, to get antenna recommendations. Really a useful site. It's not affiliated with any group or any antenna manufacturer. So I think this is a really great, useful tool. So again, antennaweb.org. That's associated with the National Association of Broadcasters. Nothing wrong with that. They'll give you some good information. And remember, we're now getting these new digital antennas that are on the UHF frequencies. So you've got to get an antenna that's right for the terrain, probably going to be directional at that distance. You've got a mast, which is great. The higher is always better. And I presume you're aiming it kind of towards the big city, right? It's all in one direction.
Yes, sir. I have it in a sweet spot that covers most channels.
Yeah, you aim it at Shreveport's probably got all the antennas within a small degree of arc. So you got to. I would say you got to have to get. You already have. It sounds like a Yagi antenna, which is fairly directional. So you may already have the best thing you can do.
Okay. Can I sneak in a quick camera question?
Sure.
Okay, cameras 2 or 3 years old towards the cheaper end. Who has the best for low lighting shooting? Sony, Olympus?
So here's all you need to know about low light. The whole idea with taking a picture in low light, and by the way, anything indoors is low light. People say, well, low light, what do you mean? Like it's one candle? No, I mean inside. Outdoors is outdoors is big is high light, right? It's indoors. It's the low light. That means almost everything you shoot is low light. Now, of course, if you're shooting a kid blowing out birthday candles, that's really low light. If you're shooting under the covers, that's really low light. So here's how you get, you got to get more light into the camera and you have to have a bigger sensor. Those are the things that make a difference. A wider aperture, aperture is the hole that lets the light in. The bigger the hole, the more light comes in, right? And the bigger the sensor, the more light it can collect. Those two things combine to make a good low light camera. There is software. Some software sharpens and gets rid of grain and so forth. Many cameras have a better, perform better at higher ISOs than others. So you want to look at a camera that has ISO is the amplification. The bigger the ISO number, the more amplification, electronic amplification. Often a high ISO means grainy, and you've seen these dark, you know, these grainy pictures. There's color noise, but there are good cameras that do better and better. And most of the newer cameras are really good at high ISOs. So you're looking for wide apertures, big sensor, high ISO capability. I think Sony's doing a bang-up job. Anything that's a full-frame sensor is going to do better. Any lens that's f1.4 or f1.2, that's a big, wide aperture. They're going to do better, but they have to be held very steady. You know, you depth of focus becomes an issue as a, at a wide aperture, so you got to be carefully focused. But I have to say, you know, there are some really good choices. I think right now my favorite is Sony. I shoot Canon a lot. I have 5D. The 5D Mark III has very good low light performance. But Nikon might even be better. Nikon can really get to those highest ISOs without a lot of grain. So they're getting better and better all around. David Bix in our chat room, by the way, on your previous question, Howard, suggesting solid signal. SolidSignal.com. These are antennas with, they claim, 100-mile range. So that might be something to check out for you.
Well, thank you very much. I've been with you since the screensavers.
Awesome.
And you'd be happy to know you turned me into a medium-range computer tech just from watching and listening to you.
Wow. I love that. I love that. That's great, Howard. Next time I'm at Shreveport Way, I'll say hello.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got to welcome two people in studio today. All the way from Winnipeg. Your name again?
Matthew.
Matthew. Drove here 36 hours. 34. Who's counting? Hours of nonstop, all-night truck driving from Winnipeg. That's awesome. Welcome. It's great to have you. And G. Scott, you came all the way from?
Tahoe, but heading to Minnesota.
Tahoe via Minnesota. Or no, the other way around. He's on his way to Minnesota. Now that the winter's over, might be able to get there. So anyway, thank you both for being here. Thank you all for listening at home. Thanks to Heather Hammond for the phone ranger for picking all the great calls today. Got another great one from Gene in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Gene, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there, Leo.
Hey, Gene.
I have a problem with a network drive that I had on RAID 1, mirrored drive, and one of them died. I put a new one in, and it did what it was supposed to do. It exactly duplicated the other. It made both of them blank.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, so I'm stuck.
It rebuilt the RAID, but it
rebuilt the RAID.
So there's two kinds of commonly used motherboard-based software RAID, or sometimes called BIOS RAID. RAID 0, which is also called scary RAID. That means you take two drives, you pretend they're one drive, either one has a trouble, the whole thing falls apart. But you have redundant RAID, RAID 1, right?
That's correct.
That the idea of, and you're sure you had RAID 1?
Yes, sir.
That's the idea, is every time I write to one of the two drives in my RAID array, the exact same data gets written to the second drive. If either drive fails, I've got an exact duplicate.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but somehow I lost it. Here's what I have to work with. I have an XP machine that I put Linux Mint Debian on, Linux, And all I can find for recovery, because I know these are Linux drives, is command line type programs. And I'm more of a GUI guy. And maybe something I could run on my Windows 7 machine would be better. So that's one
question. Well, first of all, I don't know if your data is alive. It sounds to me like when you rebuilt the array, you erased both the contents of both drives were blanked out. So whether you can recover them is not known.
Well, is it like it's reformatted but not overwritten?
I don't know. Rebuilding a RAID is not the same thing as just partitioning a drive and setting it up.
Okay.
So I've got to think that I just say there's no guarantee. So this is something to underscore that just because you're in a you're in mirrored setup is not a back RAID is never a substitute for backup. I think you've learned that.
the
hard way. I don't. You know, RAID became in wide use once they started building it in the motherboards. And I gotta say, I don't think it's a very. I've always recommended against using BIOS RAID. I just don't think it's a good choice. And if you do, then use it with great caution. Make sure that you are backing up everything. I don't care if you're doing scary RAID 0, striped RAID, or you're doing safe as houses mirrored, as you've experienced. Who knows what's going to happen when this thing fails? I don't know what the I do not know what the situation is on data. You can easily pull. Make sure you got the right drive first of all. You did replace the correct drive. I hope.
Yeah, but I so far, other than it rebuilding itself, I have three drives: the one that failed and two others now.
Yeah. And you were using EXT3, the Linux disk. File format? Do you know?
No, it's whatever. I forget the brand of it, but it's a couple years old.
But the so what's partly relevant is you need to use a restore utility that understands the file system. I don't think you're using NTFS or FAT. You're using a Linux file system, which is EXT2 or 3. In all likelihood.
I'm fairly certain of that.
Yeah, or EXT4. So you've got to use something that understands EXT, which is why you probably want to use those Linux tools, even though they're command line only. I don't know of you're not going to use a Windows-based file recovery program because it will say, I don't know what this is.
Right, okay. So I'm stuck with that. And then the next question
is... You know what? It's not as hard as it looks. Command line, you just have to learn what the switches are and figure it out. It's not going to be that hard. Of course, you need to run it off... you need to take that drive and put it aside and put Linux on a new drive and run it off of that. Don't do anything to that drive. Anything you do has the potential of erasing data on it.
Right, right. No, the Linux is on the... laptop's internal drive, so I have
this is external. Okay,
so I have a loose drive that came out of the network storage device.
Perfect.
Best way to connect a loose drive? I have a docking station.
Those are kind of cool. They look like toasters. You put
universal drive adapters. Is that the same kind of a thing?
It isn't. Those are really designed. In fact, I was talking about them last hour. Those are designed for repair situations, not for long term use. What you really want is an external drive enclosure, and they're not expensive. You put the drive in there, and it connected via USB. I presume you're using a USB connector.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
You could use SATA. If you have external SATA, eSATA, you could get an eSATA case.
Right. Right. I'm having trouble getting them to mount on the docking from the docking station.
Yeah. Now, it's my understanding when you use striping that you don't have to rebuild the array to see what's on the drive. The drive itself should be usable just by itself. Did you try that?
Yeah.
Still nothing.
Using the docking station, I see nothing. Yeah,
I'm not sure what's going on. This is, it's, you know, that's my best advice. The docking station's fine. I used to use those all the time. They're like toasters. The hard drive is like a piece of toast. You stick in there and you dock it. You can see it still. It's sticking out, but it's fine to use. My experience has been fine to use that in day-to-day operation. But if you're, I mean, really, it's safer to put it in an enclosure. So get an enclosure that's compatible with the hardware, either USB 3 if you've got it, USB 2. eSATA would be even faster still. And it should just show up. It could be the drive itself had a failure. I don't know. This is the problem with RAID, is it kind of obscures what's going on. I don't know what's going on. This is where backup is such a good idea. Backup will save you from a multitude of sins. And unfortunately, with computer technology, especially, you know, powerful operating systems, we have a lot of options. It's easy to get yourself into trouble. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. I did not know until she told me. I suppose this is one of those things I'm supposed to remember. Heather says, "Did you anything? You notice anything? Your hair, your nails, your shoes. Oh, it's your 1 year anniversary on the Tech Guy show. Can it be a year already? That's great.
Notice I don't have any diamond earrings. What's wrong with this picture?
You're not my girlfriend. You're just my call screener.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
What, gold watch?
A gold watch when you retire. What did Dr. Dean give you at the end of 11, 12 years?
Well, a massage that was paid for.
He gave you a massage? I don't think that's inappropriate.
No.
And then you had to pay him?
You gave me the best thing of all after only like 6 months.
I gave you a phone.
That's right.
You still using that phone?
Do you think?
All right. An iPhone 5, baby. Oh, no, I'm sorry. A 5S.
Yeah. Super.
Yeah. Of course, the iPhone 6 is due any day now, so.
Oh.
Don't expect a new phone. Back to the phones we go. Sherry in Palm Springs, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi.
I am going to buy some new computers, and I want to get rid of my XP. So is there an easy way that I can transfer not just the data but the programs from my old computer to whatever new computer I get?
So data is easy, and you should. And that actually is as simple as just backing it up and restoring it. Microsoft does have a settings and transfer wizard that will move your settings and your data. You can use that, but it's a little risky. Moving the apps is really not doable. That's because the apps are so tightly tied to the operating system, and you don't want to get bits and pieces of your XP on your brand new system. You would be sorry. It would be awful. So the best thing to do with a new computer or even a reinstall, in my opinion, is to always start over with the apps, reinstall the apps. A lot of the apps that are on there you don't want anymore. Now, I understand some of those apps you may not be able to find anymore.
And I'm sure I don't have the disks to
bump. Right. But I would suggest not trying to move apps over, because it's a recipe for disaster. And you're getting a nice, new, fresh computer. It's going to run fast, and it's going to be great. And you put the apps on there, and you might really regret it. Data is not such a big deal.
Yeah.
Data is not such a big deal. So get the data. You can use the settings. I guess they call it the Easy Transfer Wizard in Windows 8. And copy that stuff. My favorite way to do this is merely to have a backup of my data, a good backup. Cue the Carbonite commercial, and then restore it. But that means you have to enter settings and everything again. But call me crazy, but I like to do that. I know it's a pain and it's a lot of work, but you kind of that way you get it's just more reliable system. So I generally recommend doing it all from scratch as much as you can. Save the data, back it up, restore that, but install everything anew, put in new settings. You're going to get a much more reliable system, I think, out of it. Jack's in Pensacola, Florida. Hi, Jack. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Jack.
First time caller, long time weekend listener.
Oh, well, it's good to have you. Welcome.
Good. One information and technical. iPhone 6 coming out. what information you have on that?
Well, I got to tell you, anything anybody says is speculation because Apple doesn't say. In fact, Apple had a record quarter, by the way. I was going to talk about this and never got around to it. They have great quarterly results. iPad sales down a little bit, but iPhone sales better than ever. They, you know, clearly the iPhone is their most important product. They even took computer out of the name a couple of years ago. The iPhone is their biggest product, bigger than the iPad even. So you know they're going to have a new iPhone. They're going to do the best they can to update it. The rumors are, and I believe these are true, but again, they're just rumors, that it will be a bigger screen. The iPhone currently is the smallest screen of all the major phones by a long shot. I just got this new Windows phone. It's a 6-inch screen. That's 2 more inches than the iPhone 5S. It's, I mean, now I don't know. I don't think you need a 6-inch screen, and I'm sure Apple won't go that big. The rumors are 4.7 inches, which in my opinion is exactly the right size. That is how big every phone should be. It fits the hand. It's usable in one hand, but it gives you enough real estate so that everything looks good. What else will Apple do? Well, you know, there are rumors there might be two different sizes, but then the latest is not so. The problem is the iPhone is pretty mature. It's pretty successful. And there's not a lot of places they can go with it. They are reputedly working on a new version of the operating system, iOS, iOS 8. We do believe that will have a health passbook in it that'll keep track of health stuff and possibly tie to a watch. I think the big announcement this year from Apple is not going to be a new iPhone. I mean, yes, they will have a new iPhone, but it'll be more important what you can do with that iPhone, and in particular, the fact that that iPhone will hook up to a wearable device, probably a wristwatch of some kind. And that wristwatch will cover the three major categories that these watches do. It'll be the pedometer that a Fitbit is, or the Nike Fuel Band. It'll monitor your activity. It probably will have some health monitoring in it as well, which is kind of nice. It's hard to say exactly what. We know that you can do heart rate, but I'm not sure what else you can do with a wristwatch. And then it will also have the third item, which I think is really great to have, which is it'll connect to the phone. And when your phone rings, you can look at your watch and see who's calling. Text messages will be on your watch. I expect all of that will happen, but we don't know because Apple's not saying. And they probably won't say for a few more months. Typically, in the last few years, they've announced new iPhones in September. So I wouldn't, you know, hold my breath. We're talking 5 more months to wait. Possible they'll do it sooner than that. You know, here's the thing to watch. End of June, Apple has its big developers conference. This is the only Apple event, scheduled Apple event of the year. We'll get some hints from, they call it WWDC. So call me again end of June, and I might know a little bit more. Hey, thanks for the call. Windows Easy Transfer is not available for Windows 8.1. Maybe Microsoft finally saw the light and said, this was a bad idea. Thank you. Thanks to the chat room. They've been really, really handy all day long. Lots of great answers. If you want to be in our chat room, you want to see the show notes, you want to listen or watch to previous shows, we've got audio and video of all our shows at our website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go to get all that information if you missed anything. Thanks to our now one-year veteran, Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger. Great job as always, HH. Thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks to you for joining me. I hope you had a great weekend. Make sure you call or write your member of Congress and say, FCC, protect our internet. So important. The FCC needs to declare that internet service providers are public utilities. They are. It's not an unfair thing to do, and it allows them to protect us and keep this internet open. It's so important. The most important thing you can do this week. We'll be back next week, I'm sure, with lots of big tech stories, big tech news. So we'll see you then. Have a great Geek Week. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.